Chest. So here we have the beginning of the Sedra. Vayishlach Yaakov Melachim Lefanav. Jacob sent messengers before him. Rashi says they were real malachim, they were real angels. To Esav Achiv, to Esav his brother Esau, Ad Seir, in the land of Seir, stay Edom, the field of Edom. Then comes his instructions to them. Vayitzavotam lemor, and he said to them, he commanded them what you should say. This is what you should say to my master Esau. This is what your servant Jacob said. Im lavan gati va'icha adata. I dwelt with Lavan and I delayed till now. Now this word gati, you'll notice, has the same numerical value, and in fact it's the same letters as the word Tariag, and Tariag makes the number 613. So there is a drush on this verse, a comment on this verse. I dwelt with Jacob, with Laban, but I kept the 613 mitzvah. This is following the idea, very common among the sages and often cited by, often alluded to by Rashi, that the patriarch somehow kept the whole Torah, even though it hadn't been given yet. So he's saying, I dwelt with Laban and I kept the 613 mitzvot. Now, the significance of this will be, will come up in the discourse, why he says that. And then it says, Vayhi lishor v'chamor, I had oxen and donkeys. Chamor. So this chamor will also be mentioned in the discourse, this donkey. And son and sheep, v'eved v'shifcha, and servants, maid servants. And I'm sending to let you know, to find favor in your eyes. Now, so this is a gift that he sends off to Esau. The messengers come back and they say, you know what, your brother is very angry and he's coming to you with 400 warriors and it's very dangerous. So Vayiro Yaakov Ma'od, Jacob was very afraid. Rashi says, it says twice, Vayira, he was afraid, Vayetzelo, and he was upset. He's concerned that he and his family shouldn't be killed, and he's also upset in case he kills anyone else. And he divided the people with him, and the flocks and the cattle, and the camels. He divided them into two camps. He said, if Esav comes to one camp and attacks it, the other camp will be able to escape. So then he prays to God, famous prayer, Katonti mikol hachasadim, I'm too small for all the kindness and the truth which you've done for me. Vayalen sham balailahu, and he spent that night in that place. He sends a gift, a large gift to Esau, which it lists over here, 200 she-goats, and 20 he-goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, and so on. And he sends off this gift to send to his brother Esau. And then, Vatavo hamincha panav, and this gift went ahead of him to Esau. V'hulam balayla hu b'machne, and he rested that night in the camp. V'yatam balayla hu, and he got up in the middle of the night. V'yikach et shtei nashav, and he took his two wives, that's Leah and Rachel, v'shtei shifchotav, and its two concubines, Bila and Zilpa, that Achad Asa Yeladav and his 11 children, v'yavo et mava yabok, and he crossed over a kind of stream, the ford of Yabok. V'yikachem, and he took them, v'yavirem et hanachal, he made them go over the stream, v'yavir et hashelo, and he sent across his possessions, and then v'yivater Yaakov levado, then Jacob is left alone. Vayavek Ishimo, and a man wrestled with him. That's actually an angel. The sages say it was the prince, the spiritual angel of Esau, Ad Alot Hashachar, till dawn, till the break of dawn. And then there's the angel saw that it couldn't overcome him, so it touched. Vayiga b'chaf yerecho, it touched his thigh, but teka kaf yerech Yaakov, and the thigh of Jacob was dislocated in wrestling with the angel. And then he said, the angel said to him, "Vayoma shalcheni, let me go, ki Allah hashach, dawn is rising." Rashi says the angel has to sing shira, the song that the angels sing at dawn. Vayom, and he said, Lo ashalechecha ki im brachtani, I won't let you go unless you bless me. And then the angel says to him, Mashmecha, what is your name? And he says, Yaakov. And the angel says, your name is not going to be called Yaakov anymore, Jacob, it's going to be Yisrael. Now the word Yisrael relates to the word Tsar, that you have prevailed, you're a prince. Kisarita im Elokim be'emanashim, you've wrestled with angels and with human beings, v'atuchal, and you've been successful. So, and then Yaakov asked the angel his name, and the angel wouldn't give him his name. Rashi says the angels don't have fixed names. And then the angel blessed him there. And Jacob called the name of that place Peniel, because I saw God face to face and I was saved. So that is the story which the discourse said in 1982 is going to be discussing. Are there any points that anyone would like to raise? I'd just like to say greetings to Rabbi Lou and to Gloria. Lovely seeing you. Are there any points that anyone would like to mention so far? We just looked briefly, very briefly, at this extract of the Torah portion. Any comments? All right. Okay. So now let's have a look at the discourse. So that means I have to find the discourse. Just one moment. Here it is. Right. Okay, now, unlike our usual discourse, which has got points, it's pointed, this one is not. Now, where has it gone? Is it here? One second. I have to. Just looking for it. Here we are. A little bit elusive. Right. So normally it's pointed with a kind of commentary around the sides. But now it's not. So I forgot to put on the minor melody, so maybe Rabbi Lou and me can now sing the minor melody. How does it go? You're muted.
You don't want to hear my voice with my cold.
It's not catching over the internet.
Yeah, we'll listen to you. Da ya 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 ma 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 Ya yedamba ya ya yo ya yedamba ya ya yum ha yedamba ha yedamba ho ya yedamba oh ya 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 ma ma ya ya yo ya ya. Thank you very much. Good. Right. Okay. Now here we have this discourse. Vayishlach Yaakov Malachim lefanav begomet. Jacob sent messengers before him. Va'achakachtiv, and after that it's written, Vayivater Yaakov levado. Jacob was left alone. Vayeh v'kiishimo, and a man, really an angel, wrestled with him. And an angel wrestled with him. Now, by the way, here we're looking at the way the discourse is like transcribed. The Chozrim, the people who had the tremendous power, Rabbi Lu is included in that, to be able to remember a teaching that the Rebbe said, and after the Hasidic gathering to be able to say it over or to write it down, which Rabbi Lu did himself. So that is, so this is like basically this sort of transcript, which has actually been printed in a book. So they've added just basic footnotes whenever the Rebbe quotes a verse or a passage in the Talmud. So they've given the footnote where that is from. What we normally look at is something that's been worked on much more, giving a kind of commentary to it, adding points, the vowels, making it easier to read. But this is in a sort of a more raw form. Va'amru razal, and the sages said, ala pasuk vayeva kishimo, that a man, this angel, wrestled with him. Shehelu avak ad kisei hakavod. They raised dust to the very throne of glory. So in other words, to some exalted place. Shezem morer, and that indicates al tachlit habirur, that Jacob was somehow, now the word mevareh is normally translated as sift, sifting something. Now sifting is a procedure when you have, let's say corn, and there's little bits wheat that you've reaped, and there's bits of grit among the corn, so you sift it, separating the corn from the bits of grit, or maybe it's corn from the chaff. It's something that is not necessary to be there and you want to get rid of it. So you select out the thing that you do want. Now this concept of biru, which is sort of an item in food production, it's also something we're forbidden to do on Shabbat. We have to be careful selecting things on Shabbat, like if there's a bowl of grapes on the table and some of the grapes are moldy, so you want to present this grape, you want to take the grapes, make them look nice, a person might pull off the moldy grapes and make the bunch look nicer. Well, you can't do that on Shabbos to beautify the bowl of grapes. You can take the grapes that you want to eat, but you can't pull off the moldy grapes on Shabbat, because Shabbat we rest from all these 39 categories of work, and one of those categories is Berur. But also, Kabbalistically speaking, Berur is the procedure that we are doing. That's what we are actually doing to the world. Our whole relationship with the world is that we are sifting it. We are relating to the world in such a way that we can sift out its sacred sparks and elevate them. So Berur Netzutzot, we are here selecting these sacred sparks and elevating them to God. And so this is what Jacob was doing to the angel. He was elevating the angel. The angel is the angel of Esau. And the angel of Esau, so to speak, has a lot of negative aspects to him. Jacob, by wrestling with him, is transforming him and elevating the good to the throne of glory, to a very exalted level. Shema'alim et avaka berurim, they were elevating the dust from the sifting process and lemaila maila to a very exalted level. Ve'ofen haberur, and the method of sifting, hukamo inyan v'yevak kipshuto, it's like the word wrestling, literally. Hitapkut v'hitapkut, that you're struggling with something and you are cleaving to that thing, as explained in another discourse, shezem, by the Mittler Rebbe, by the second Lubavitcher Rebbe, shezel inyan padu b'shalom nafshi mikhavli. That's what it means. He redeemed in peace my soul from the, now the word mikhavli can be understood as from the battle which is with me, or also it's something which is near to me. Sheinyan apdiya b'shalom, the idea of the redemption in peace, hu al yedei akhav. Now it's through the Kav. Now Kav, literally, perusho milchama. It means war, it means a battle. Ve'hitlavshut v'haberurim. It means being involved in this sifting process. Va'ad shehi ba'ofen shel Kav v'kiruv. And then it takes the other meaning of the word, that it's in a way of being very close to something. Ad l'kiruv haguf zeh v'zeh, till the two bodies wrestling together are next to each other. The two bodies come together, they're wrangling together, and the two bodies are entwined, as it were. The al yedei, and now. So why? What's the significance of this sifting now? The al yedei shleimut habirurim, that through the wholeness of the sifting, Bayim el ha'geula, we come to the redemption. We come to the redemption. The sifting is our task in this world. We have to sift existence. Whenever we are given a situation like a choice, this kind of food is cheaper, but it's less kosher. And the other kind of food is more expensive or more difficult to get, but it's more kosher. So one takes the more kosher option. Now, at that moment, one has sifted something. One has elevated a spark. One is connecting something to the divine. By making that choice, we are connecting the world to the divine. And when this takes place on a global level, through the entire Jewish people making the right choices and keeping the right mitzvahs at the appropriate time, they are actually reaching, the reach of the Jewish people is through the entire world. and we connect with the entire world. And by this sifting process, we are transforming the entire world. We're elevating the spark, and through that, we get the concept of coming to the Geula, to the redemption. So this is the process that leads to Mashiach. V'zeo, d'zeo ha-kesher, and that is the connection, haftorat ha-pasha, v'siyuma. At the end of reading the Torah, we read a passage from the prophets. And this week, a very common custom, there are one or two other customs, but a very common custom is to read the book of Avadia. You see, we're talking in the Sedra about Jacob and Esau. Now, Esau, the tradition is, he is the ancestor of Rome. The whole power of Rome is the power of Esau. And Avadia, this relates to this whole power of Rome. And the end of the Haftorah is, Bahaita Lashem Amlucha, God will have the kingship. So that's the conclusion. When will God have the kingship completely? When Mashiach comes. So this is about Mashiach and the Haftorah, the same way that the Sedra is about Mashiach as well. Now it's known, various Hasidic discourses of Rabbi Shneur Zalman and of the Mittler Rebbe. Now with the Mittler Rebbe, last Shabbat was the 9th of Kislev, which was his birthday and Yahrzeit. Sunday was the 10th of Kislev, which is the time when he was released, like his father, because of the machinations of the opponents of Hasidism. He was also put in prison, and then at a certain time he was released, and that was on the 10th of Kislev. Some years earlier, his father, Rabbi Shneur Zalman, 1798, had been put in prison and because of the Mitnagdim, and then he was released on the 19th of Kislev, and the 19th of Kislev is a very big Chabad celebration, which incidentally I meant to send you and I didn't manage to do it. I meant to do it a few days ago, but didn't get around to it. Invitation to the Inspire celebration of this Yud Tes Kislev, which it's going to be next Sunday. So I'm sorry to send it so late, but I hope I manage to send it to you tonight. I'll send you this invitation to this event. It does cost money. I think it costs £25 to go, but it's a per person, but it's a it's a way of coming together with the Chabad community of around the country to a considerable extent. Now, so that's the celebration of the 19th of Kislev. So the Rabbi Shneur Zalman and his son, Rabbi Dovber, Shebehem Mavarim et kol ha-psukim al Seder Pasha, they explain the verses of this Sedra, and they go through step by step explaining what it's about. Umavu Hashem, now we're skipping a few lines, it explains that. First it says, Jacob sent angels or messengers to Esau. And he writes, as we noted when we read it, Im Lavan Gati, I dwelt with Lavan. And the Masha Ama Yaakov Esav Im Lavan Gati, the fact that he said this, these words, when he sent this message to Esau, the Kavanah was Elohu Gematria Tariyat. It's the numerical value 613. Kibazesh Amar Lashon Gati, by the fact he uses this word Gati, I lived, and he doesn't, or dwelt, he doesn't use any other word, which would also mean living or dwelling. But he says, but it's like the saying of the sages, Im Lavan Gati, which it quotes in this discourse, I dwelt with Esau, with Laban, sorry, I dwelt with Laban, with Tariyag Mitzvot Shemati, and I kept the 613 mitzvot.
Hainu she'avodato etzel Lavan is service with Laban, where Jacob lived, hai for a long time. Hai tabatariag mitzvot was with the 613 mitzvot, which is in Yana Berurim, which is the sifting. The whole process, the mitzvot themselves are doing the sifting. That's what the mitzvot do. And so his work with Laban, with Laban, was to sift him, to purify him, to elevate him. And because of this, he sent this message to his brother Esau, to achieve the sifting also for him. And he told him, that from his point of view, from Jacob's point of view, he had completed the task of the birurim, of the sifting. And Jacob is already ready for the redemption. And so he's sending this message to Esau. This is really the message he's sending. I am ready for the redemption. But also on the further point, Shemitzad Yaakov, from the point of view of Jacob, Gam Esav Hayakva Muchan El Agula, Esau himself was also ready for the redemption, as far as Jacob was concerned. The Inyanon Shel Esav, because the concept of Esav, who of Esau, who Olam Ato, is the world of chaos. See, the way that Esau is described in these Kabbalistic and Hasidic texts is Esau relates to the world of chaos, and the world of chaos is a higher level of spiritual world where the radiance, the divine radiance, is very intense, but the vessels are very small. And so therefore the vessels can't contain the radiance, and that's why the vessels broke. And so that's the breaking of the vessels, which leads to a lot of negativity. It's a kind of an explosion of divine energy. And so the divine energy attaches itself to inappropriate things, which are therefore attract us in various ways, even though they are forbidden. So that is the world of chaos. Umitzad Yaakov, and as far as Jacob was concerned, Haya Esav b'chinas Esav achiv. Esau was Esau, my brother. He calls him my brother. Hanu shebirim imenu et inyanim analim. He sifted out from him the positive aspects, shebeolam ator, which were in the world of chaos, this exalted realm where the radiance, orot merubim d'tor, the great radiance of the world of Tov, the world of chaos. And that's how he continues. I had oxen, donkeys, sheep, servants, maidservants. Because it says in a certain tract of Hasidic teaching, it's not enough to serve God just in a general way, with the essence, with the deep quality of our soul, the five dimensions of the soul, nefesh, ruach, neshama. All of these words can be translated soul, but each one is going deeper, and then chaya and yechida. So yechida is the deepest level of the soul, but it's not enough to just serve God with that deepest level of the soul only, but one also has to, even the next level down, it's not enough. There has to be service of God in all details, and contemplating in a way of details. Now, let's just stop this for a second and let's just consider this idea. Hi, Paige, and Ophir. Hi. So this contemplation in a way of details, you see, one can contemplate in a very general way that God creates the world and that's a fantastic thing. And I'm so grateful to God and I feel great joy and love of God.
But there's also a more detailed way of contemplating, where one thinks in a more detailed way. Now, if one takes the text, the Gate of Unity of Faith, which is the second section of Tanya, one has there a kind of description that could be understood as a description of a sort of contemplative process. And one goes step by step with that process. And it's more than just details. It's more than just something general. It goes into details. And taking that, those series of chapters one by one, gives one a beautiful insight into the relation of the divine with the world. The first chapter is about the way the divine radiance fills the world, and everything exists because of that divine radiance. The second chapter explains that since that is the case, miracles could happen at any time, because God is all the time making everything exist, and so he can make it exist in a slightly different way. Like, for example, on Hanukkah, instead of the oil lasting one day, it lasts 8 days, and everything is subject to the possibility of miracles. We should be aware of that. Chapter three reveals the fact that if godliness is the essence of existence, then really godliness is the main focus. So how do we see a world at all? Why don't we just see godliness? So it explains in chapter four that there is a veiling concept which veils the godliness so that we are able to see the world. But since the godliness is veiled, well, that might cause sort of despair or panic or despondency. So chapter five speaks about the way that God intended to create the world with the attribute of severity, hiding the godliness, but then he decided to add the attribute of kindness, revealing godliness in miracles and the tzaddikim, the righteous people described in the Torah. And then in chapter six and seven, one works to a more integrated way of seeing everything, that there's either the upper unity where all is God, when we say the Shema, or the lower unity where there's a world, but the world is suffused with godliness. So that is an example of something which is not just a reflection in general about the nature of the divine. And so I'm very happy that I'm in a world that God has created and continues to create, but it gives a sort of little pattern of one's thinking. Now, the Rebbe applies this. Are there any questions at this point, by the way? Yes, I've just been talking, but are there any questions?
Continue unveiling what's behind the veil.
Okay, so the Rebbe applies this to the words, "Vayehi li shor v'chamor v'tzon v'eved v'shifcha." I had oxen and donkeys and sheep and servants and maidservants. This is like the process of thinking in detail in terms of being inspired in relation to God. That's why Jacob said, I had oxen and donkeys. He counts through all the details of the sifting process. In each of them, he affected this sifting in a detailed way. And about all of them, he says, I had, shahabiru hayava often deli, the sifting was in a way of me, mine. Biru betachlit hashlema, a sifting with total wholeness. The gam kamaimer azal, and also as the sages say, kol makom shenema li ein azaz lo'olam, whenever it says li, it means something which is permanent, it's got a tremendous strength. Hainu shahabiru hu be'oifen nitzchim, his sifting was in an eternal way, the olam va'ed, forever. That's why Jacob was ready for the redemption. As the sages tell us, chamor, when he mentions the donkey,
That means Mashiach. That's a hint to Mashiach, the idea of Mashiach coming riding on a donkey. So that is a hint to Mashiach. So in other words, he's going through this list of animals that he has, that he possesses. It's really a code word saying, I have sifted through all these different dimensions of existence, and therefore I am ready for Mashiach. What about you, my dear brother? Now, the problem is, Omnam, however, Kol Zeham Hayam Mitzad Mashevet Yaakov. All this was because of the thought of Yaakov, the thought of Jacob. Shemitzido, from his point of view, Hayakva Muchan El Agula, he was ready for the redemption. Over Melekva Itagula V'Pol, and therefore, there was, as far as he was concerned, it was the redemption. But afterwards the angels came. They told him that as far as Esau is concerned, Ein Zekach, that's not the case at all. She'ena achiv el Esau. Esau doesn't regard him as a brother. V'gam holich likhatchav arba meot ishimo, and there are 400 men with him. Now Jacob knew before this that there are these 400 men as well. I'm not quite sure how, he already knew that there were these 400 men. But he did not see them as a serious threat. Mikom makom, nonetheless, hu hashav, he thought, shedalad med ish eded, that these 400 men, heim dargan la'alit biyoteh, they express a very exalted level. And we have this as a Kabbalistic term, a Zohar term. Dalad Neyot Almin Dichsufin, the 400 worlds of yearning, which are on a very exalted level. And they are like the Arba Meyot Shekel Kesev over the Sochet Avram, the 400 shekels that Abraham paid for the Ma'orat HaMachpelah in Hebron, the burial ground in Hebron, and he paid 400 shekels, and the Zohar describes this as relating to 400 spiritual worlds. So when Jacob heard about this 400 warriors with Esau, he thought, it's this exalted spiritual level. So this is a fascinating example of how one can look at a situation which another person might say is completely negative, but from Jacob's point of view, it's positive. Look, Esau, he's even got 400 men like the 400 worlds of yearning of the Zohar. That's Shehem Chinat. Now the Hine Socher, and now the 400 shekels that Abraham paid for the Machpelah cave. It says they were Ovel HaSocher, they were shekels you could pay to a merchant. And here the merchant is explained, Hu Sfirat HaKeter, that means the Sfirat Keter, because Keter is something that goes around like a crown. Keter means crown. So crown goes round the head, and the word Socher, merchant, also means going round, like a merchant goes round trying to make money. So there it is, something that surrounds Sovev u'makif, for David Mel Shekel Kesev, heim lemaile gam mibchinat haKesev. And the 400 shekels, they're even higher than the crown. The crown goes round and the 400 shekels are higher. So that is this, these 400 shekels. But that's the way that Jacob looked at it. Abu Bapoel, but actually what it was, the way that Esau looked at it, they're not this exalted spiritual level. They are 400 men below. They're warriors who are going to do, of course, a lot of trouble. And therefore, they have to be sifted in a different way. And it explains in the various pieces of Hasidus how what Jacob went on to do caused this further sifting of Esau and his 400 men. And as we see in the story, the end of the story was that Jacob and Esau sort of was reconciled to a certain extent with Jacob. It's an uneasy relationship, but nonetheless reconciled. So that's the situation there, Jacob and Esau. But then we come to this other part of the passage. Now later on, Jacob was left alone. But Omr Hazal, the sages say, which Rashi quotes, I think, Shanishah al Pachim Ktanim, he remained there, or he went back there, for small vessels that had somehow been forgotten. Now, the second Babacher Rebbe, Rabbi Dov there, he writes about this, Shazer Pele, this remarkable thing. What does it mean that he was there because of these little vessels? How can he risk everything in relation to these little vessels? The explanation is the Inyan Pachim Ktanim, these little vessels. Now remember that in the world of chaos, the radiance is very great, but the vessels are very small. Hu Inyan Kenim Muatin Dato. This really means the small vessels of the world of chaos. The main thing about them is they are small vessels. They're not only small in quantity. They're small in quality. And they have the quality of bitul, miyut or bitul. They have the quality of selflessness. The vessels of the world of chaos were in a state of bitul. Jacob wanted he should have that quality of selflessness. He wanted that quality of smallness. As he said in his prayer, Katonti, I'm very small. He wanted the smallness. That selflessness, Shubakalim the Torah, which is in the vessel. The vessels of the world of Torah. And if he remained there by himself, it seems to be in a kind of contemplative mode in order to absorb the smallness of the vessels, the small vessels of the world of Torah. Now, as we noted when we read the verses, it mentions that first of all, he sent his wives, Rachel and Leah, and his children and his concubine wives, Bilhah and Zilpah. He sent them all across this river Yabok. And in Torat Chaim, which is the book of Hasidic teachings of the Mittler Rebbe, of the second Amateur Rebbe, Sham, there in this discourse, maybe Shnei Pelushim v'inyan v'yivate Yaakov levado. It brings two explanations of Jacob remaining alone. And the Mittler Rebbe writes, Sha'apelush harishon enu mityashev al piyabshah. The first explanation doesn't quite fit with the literal meaning of the words, the pshat, the simple text. And so therefore it's better to explain it in simple ways, not according to the first commentary that he gives. Now the Rebbe discusses this point here, that we see this a number of times in the writing of the Mittler Rebbe, the writings of the second Avamcher Rebbe, that he will give an explanation, then he veers away from that explanation. He even criticizes that explanation. And the Rebbe says, this is telling us that in the teachings of Hasidism, there are certain things where one thought this way and then one thought a different way. All the effort that goes into intellectual discovery. In such a way that if you make the effort, then you'll find it. So they're a product of a kind of cerebral effort. Now, that goes against the normal way of understanding what a Hasidic discourse is. As we'll see, even though in the teachings of our Rebbein, that means the seven, the six Lubavitcher Rebbe's before our Rebbe, who is the seventh, Nemru b'derech lo yosho. The teachings that they produce, that they reveal to us, they go with a direct radiance, k'netinat ha-Torah v'ha-Sinai, like the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. The giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai was a direct revelation. It wasn't perhaps this, perhaps that. You see, when you study Talmud, the Talmud makes a statement and then it contradicts it. Someone else comes along and contradicts it, and then you discuss that, and then you find another contradiction, what this person says, and it goes round and round, and new material is being added. That's the Talmudic part of Torah. But the Hasidic and Kabbalistic part of Torah is usually understood as a clear revelation from above. And here we see that it's not just something clear, inside it there is also all kinds of interesting possibilities. Should it be this and should it be that? And so the Rebbe is saying that that is also a quality of Hasidic teaching. Even though the teachings of our Rebbeim, that means the sixth Rebbeim before the Rebbe, they come in a way of a straight light, k'netinat ha-Torah v'ha-Sinai, like the giving of the Torah on Mount Sinai. And then the Rebbe alludes to a discussion that the Hasid, Rabbi Hillel of Parich, had with one of the Lubavitch Rebbeim. I think it was the Tzemach Tzedek. He was in the lifetime of three Lubavitch Rebbeim. And the Tzemach Tzedek had given a discourse, and now the Tzemach Tzedek and Reb Hillel are discussing the discourse together. And the Tzemach Tzedek, in analyzing the discourse, says one thing, and Reb Hillel gives another thing, another way of understanding. So the Tzemach Tzedek says to him, "Why are you disagreeing with me? I said this discourse, so to speak, it's my discourse, and I understand what it's saying." So Reb Hillel answered him and said, "Look, when you give the discourse, it's like the Torah coming from Mount Sinai. But then you and I, we can analyze the discourse together. In other words, you were in a different state of mind when you said the discourse, and the discourse flowed through you, but now you and I can discuss what it actually means." So the Rebbe, the Tzemach Tzedek, did not accept this, but nonetheless, our Rebbe is quoting it here, that when the discourse is given, it's like something coming from Mount Sinai. You don't think of it as something that has been intellectually put together by the Hasidic Rebbe who's teaching it, as if he's like carefully working something out, like you would if you were producing a Talmudic analysis or something like that. So the Rebbe says, although we normally say that about Hasidic teaching, nonetheless, there is a certain superior quality when you talk about things which are a straight presentation, like, for example, Jewish law. There's books like by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, which present the fixed and clear statements of what the law actually is, without the discussion, just the clear statement of the law. There might be a discussion exactly what the law means. And because of this, we take our halakha to go according to the Babylonian Talmud rather than the Jerusalem Talmud. Because in the Jerusalem Talmud, there's very little discussion. It's more presenting a teaching, but without going through all the different possibilities. So what the Rebbe is saying is that although usually the fixed halakha has a superior quality, there's a sense in which the discussion which leads to that fixed halacha is on a higher level. Just a moment, Ophir. I'll just finish this thought. And so therefore, we generally say that in the Jerusalem Talmud, there's less discussion. It goes straight to the point. But in the Babylonian Talmud, there's a lot of discussion. And so that's why the Rebbe says, the halakha is like the Babylonian Talmud, not the Jerusalem Talmud, because of the many discussions that are there in the because of the Babylonian Talmud. Okay, Ophir, what would you like to say?
Ophir? Sorry, I was just unmuting myself. So is it the reason why the Babylonian Talmud has more discussion than the Jerusalem Talmud? It's because when the Babylonian Talmud was being put together, that's when most of Am Yisrael was in captive exile in Babylon. So all these scholars were in Babylon. And from what little I know and understand, one of the definitions of the two is Or Yeshar and Or Chazel. So Or Chazel is the Babylonian Talmud, Or Yeshar is the Jerusalem Talmud. So you need to explain more the Or Chazel and give more explanations and ideas behind it. With the Or Yeshar, it's direct light. You're literally in Jerusalem. You're right by the Kotel. You're at the Beit HaMikdash. You can see the direct light. So therefore, it needs less an explanation. It's just directly and straight to the point. But then there must be some of all instruction to just expand on it a little bit, because people are bound to get a little bit lost by the meaning of the directness of it. I'm just a combination of what my thoughts were and the question.
I'm not quite sure what you're saying up here. The traditional statement in
I'm asking is go on.
Yes.
Go on. Sorry. Go on.
Well, so what are you actually asking?
What I was saying was that is the Babylon, the reason why the Babylonian Talmud has more explanations is because all the scholars were in Babylon at the time, and because the Jerusalem Babylon is supposed to be direct light, i.e. direct light from Hashem. So therefore, a direct light needs less explanation than a returning or reflective light, which is what the Babylonian Talmud is.
Yes, that's true.
So
the light is direct, and so it's therefore more obvious, and so it needs less discussion. Whereas in Babylon, so to speak, and you use the term returning light, which is fair enough, the light is more concealed, and as a result of that, there's a lot more discussion. But because there's more discussion, or just in a very simple way, more situations are discussed, and so when establishing what Jewish law is, it is easier to get the full range of possible situations from the Babylonian Talmud than from the Jerusalem Talmud.
I'm not well read enough yet to know, to even be able to give an example of the Babylonian Talmud, but there must be things in the Jerusalem Talmud that I'm also not well acquainted with yet that you do need to explain, because even though it's direct instruction and
it's
self-evident.
That's how the discourse goes on. Yeah. Okay. So let's come back to it.
Okay. I have a question for later, okay. But I'll wait.
So let's keep that. Okay. So there we have the idea that you need effort, even in something which the idea that even in something which is bright, there is still the idea of having effort. And there's an interesting story about the Maggid and Rabbi Shneur Zalman. The Maggid, the second leader of Hasidism, compared with Rabbi Shneur Zalman, who is the third leader. So the Maggid asked him about a certain teaching, whether he should say it in public. And in the end, he didn't say that. He said something else. So in other words, there's a certain level of discussion. And similarly with Moshe, when he received the Torah from Sinai, he received also the discussions of the Torah, like the pilpul, all the discussions backwards and forwards. And this relates also to the Nesi'i Chabad, the leaders of Chabad, that even though there's a wonderful thing that Hasidic teachings tend to be as a direct radiance, there's also the possibility of discussion and analysis and different pathways. This is what you said now, Ophir, as in Yerushalmi, in the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, that also there you find some people, there is some discussion. It's not all simply simple statements. There is some complex discussion as well. And so now we can understand what it says, that we find in the Zohar and the Kabbalah, there are a number of different opinions. Even though it says in the Zohar, Shaleit Taman Lo Kasha, that there in the Zohar, there is no Kasha. It's not a process like the Babylonian Talmud where a statement is made and then a question is asked on that statement. And the Zohar, it says about the Zohar, there isn't that process. It's just a pure statement. But nonetheless, despite that, there is some discussion as well. There is a certain level of pull and of discussion and backwards and forwards and different opinions. And so then, when the Alter Rebbe speaks about the many questions which are there and discussions in the Babylonian Talmud, the example he brings of a figure in the Babylonian Talmud who brings a lot of discussions, it is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is the author of the Zohar, which is the whole idea of the inwardness of Torah. So that's surprising that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai actually had a lot of questions, as we see in the Talmud Shabbat, where it's describing what happened when Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was in the cave, and he was there in the cave for 12, 13 years. And at the beginning, before he went into the cave, he in discussion with his son-in-law, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, he would ask 12 questions and Rabbi Pinchas would respond to him. And when he came out of the cave, he would be able to give not just 12, but 24 responses. He knew more through being in the cave and having studied or taught or written the Zohar, writing it in mentally, so to speak. And the Gemara explains that the Gemara only brings a few of these questions. So there are many questions, but it only brings a few. So therefore, we can understand that in Hasidic teachings, that also in Hasidic teachings, there's also the advantage, as well as being this direct light, there's also the advantage of the discussion. Even if in the written form it only came in one way, nonetheless, there might be hints to the discussion that came before it. However, in a revealed way, we actually see this in the writings of the Mittler Rebbe, the second of Babitcher Rebbe, because we many times find there the statement, not like above. In other words, he explains something, then he says, no, not like this. Here's another way of understanding it. So the Mittler Rebbe himself, in his own Hasidic teachings, you see the different pathways. And that's more than among other rabbis. Now, so therefore, also the first opinion of the Mittler Rebbe is also significant, but particularly important is the fact that there is this second opinion. So now we're going to the point where he discusses the two opinions. What does it mean, Jacob passing his wives and his children across the river? So the first opinion that the Mittler Rebbe gives, he took them across the river, he made them go across the river away from Esau so that they could run away from Esau. And he is then left struggling with the angel of Esau. And it goes into this, but I think we're going to jump over this. This is the first opinion. But the second opinion, which he brings, which the Mithla Rebbe brings in this discourse, and that's what he concludes with, is that when Jacob made his wives and children cross the river, he made them go Shehevyet Nashabu Vanav. He passed his wives and children El Esau, to Esau. Benisha Levadu, and he alone is left, Lilchum im Saro Shel Esau, to battle with the angel of Esau, the Takno, to put him right spiritually, Ulahaloto, and to elevate him. Umavuah b'amaymashav, and explains there in the discourse, Shepeirish zeh matim im pashtut ha'ktuvim, that from the Mithla Rebbe's point of view, this fits better the actual text of the verses in the Bible. The b'pashtus, hevet nashav uvanav el Esau, from which one sees that he is sending his wives and children to Esau. Now, the Rebbe is now discussing this a bit more. But he says, the Lahavin Nashavu Banav Letzara Sheni Nachok Me'esav, in order to say that with the first explanation, that he passed his wives and children over the river away from Esau, that does not fit the service that we have, that we have to make for Hashem, a dwelling in the lower world. In order to do that properly, we would have to make a dwelling for Esau. We would have to move towards it. It's like Esau, it's not a dwelling for Esau, but it's a dwelling of Esau. We have to use the world. We have to refine the world so that God can dwell in it. And in this discourse, Esau represents the world. So they have to connect with Esau. It's no good saying the wives and children should move away from Esau. It's not a matter of living in an enclave. It's going into the world and being able to bring godliness into the world. Now, that's a very interesting thing, because they are going towards Esau and they're leaving Jacob wrestling with the angel. Now that is something really stunning. That's a very stunning concept. And just a couple of weeks ago was the Shluchim conference, where thousands of Shluchim, Lubavitch emissaries from around the world, they have been all around the world. They came back, like all the different places they live in, wherever it might be. And then they came back for this special point of connection together again with each other and with the whole ideal of what they're trying to do. And then they went back again to their different places, whether it was in Australia or Japan or Iceland or wherever it might be. Now, in all this, you've got the image of Jacob wrestling with the angel. And that is like the Rebbe wrestling with the angel, with these forces of negativity and sifting them, so that the individual shluchim, the individual emissaries, which really includes each one of us here in this call, in this Zoom event, that for each one of us, the Rebbe is there wrestling with the angel in order to transform it so that we are able to do our shlichut in the world. We, each one of us, encounters different kinds of challenge. And that challenge that we encounter, we need this input from behind, that there is the Rebbe wrestling with the angel. And it's in that way that we come ultimately to the redemption. So now let's just have a look at the very last paragraph of this discourse. Through our actions and our service, in this service of sifting the sparks during the time of exile, we are able that there should be, that we should reach, God will have the kingship, as it says at the end of the Haftarah, B'geula amitid v'ashleima, with the true and complete redemption. And even before that, we taste a little bit of it, and especially through spreading the fountains of Hasidic teaching outside in a storm, in a positive way. And through this, we are zoche that shiyu behoyu melochim amnaich v'sarasem v'nikosayich oed v'zman agolus, that kings and princesses will look after us, and through this bayim, through this we come to Bayishlach Yaakov Balachim. Jacob sent angels, that God gives these angels l'chol echad v'echad, to each one of us. Shehum imarasha kilad Yaakov, that we get this by virtue of being a member of the Jewish people. Ad shehu nase balavais, and we become the master of these angels. B'sholeich otam le'esav, and we send the angels to Esau. Lomela, to tell him, shekvah nigmara avodat ha'pirudim, the work of sifting the sparks has already been completed. Kvah efshe leilich lekabu p'nei Mashiach tzidkenu, and it's already ready, we're ready now to go and greet Mashiach tzidkenu, ad shabam leyon shekula Shabbat, and through that we will come to a day which is always Shabbat, like the time of Mashiach, umenucha lechai elamim, and peacefulness in a tremendous way, v'mheda yameinu mamash.
Umayin. Koyach, Rebbe.